बैठ जाएगा तो मैं भी वहाँ जा सकती हूँ आतंकियों के साथ लड़ाई करने।
हमारे वहाँ कह रहा हूँ कि 4-5 भाई और हों, देश के ऊपर शहीद हो जाए सर।
मेरे को ना अपने पापा पे गर्व हो रहा है क्योंकि मेरे पापा मरे नहीं है बल्कि एक शहीद हुए आर्मी में थे और वो भी देश के लिए मरे।
They aren't just statistics. They aren't faceless or nameless. For the children they leave behind, for the families they leave behind, these are lives gone. 18 soldiers now martyred in that terror attack on the army administrative camp in Uri near the line of control. And that single image you see on your screen of that young girl, a young girl with that one single teardrop, dignified even as she looks at the coffin of her father coming home, stoic, one of three sisters. These three daughters holding their heads high, the daughters of Jabra Munda, just one of the 18 jawans martyred in that terror strike. In fact, these are the heartbreaking images, these are the devastating images that are left behind in the wake of that terror strike. As we discuss diplomacy and counter-offensives and strategy and how India will counter Pakistan, for these families, there is now a gaping hole in their lives. And it is the children, like you see this picture of a young boy sitting by the coffin of his father, or as we said, this young girl with one teardrop on her face, one of three sisters, the daughters of Jabra Munda. These are the real flesh and blood stories of the families that will have to live with this loss. All this on a day when India is strategizing on how to isolate Pakistan globally. Good evening, my name is Barkha Dutt and this broadcast is coming to you live from New York, where the United Nations General Assembly is convening this week. The UNGA here in New York is now going to be the latest battlefield, in a sense, for India to make its point against Pakistan. India was already planning to reinforce and underline Pakistan's perpetrating cross-border terrorism. India was also planning, as we've already seen in the United Nations Human Rights Council in its reply, to raise the issue of atrocities in Balochistan, of human rights violations in Balochistan, as well as Pakistan-occupied Kashmir. And now with this terror strike in Uri, where now 18 soldiers are martyred, many others are still injured, and so those numbers could rise, India is going to bring home that message. At a meeting that was convened by the Prime Minister, this was the decision taken to isolate Pakistan globally. That is the diplomatic offensive, even as the government explores military and strategic options. In this special 60-minute program coming to you live from New York, where the global attention is now going to shift and India is going to put its case on the global stage, we will be looking at what those options could be. First, let's go across to my colleague Sudhiranjan Sen. He's in Srinagar. He's just returned from the line of control in Uri. Sudhi, we have seen a briefing by the Director General of Military Operations, the DGMO, very clear that there is proof, very concrete proof, despite Pakistan's denial. There is literally the imprint of terror. There are markings on the weapons that have been recovered from the terrorists that were killed in this encounter. What is the army saying? What proof is India going to place before the world?
Well, to begin with, number one, Barkha, the grenades that have been found, and that's what my sources are indicating, clear markings of Pakistani ordnance there. The AK-47s recovered also does have markings. Most importantly, the food rations, the food stores that they were carrying, clearly marked packaged in Pakistan. And also some of the maps that they have picked up are clearly indicating that it has come from the other side. Not only that, the initial analysis of the GPS that has been found on them is also giving us locations which is across the border, and this is more or less strengthening India's hands, or this is some of the evidence that India is going to place. Mind you, very similar evidence had been found in Pathankot, which was which India at that point of time, using the GPS, using the same markings, had said that this Pakistan cannot perhaps deny that these men and these stores and these ordinances has been been sourced from across the border, and since these are military grade material, it has to have some involvement of the establishment. Barka.
Sudhi, there are also questions that have been raised and are being asked. Did these terrorists have prior intelligence that this was actually one unit transferring to another unit? How did they know that at this moment this transfer could be happening, thereby making the soldiers much more vulnerable? The opposition is also raising questions about why these soldiers were in tents and why were they not in... Why were they not in the more fortified buildings? These are some of the questions that are going to be raised, and let us take those questions to our panel now. Samit Patra of the BJP is with us. Manish Tiwari of the Congress will be with us in just a moment. We're also joined by Brigadier Gurmeet Kaval. Ambassador KC Singh is with us. And let me start with you, Samit. What is not clear is what happens next. And, you know, while we have seen very, very strong words from the Prime Minister, could you give us a sense of what it means to shun Pakistan diplomatically? I'm here in New York. One knows that one platform is the United Nations General Assembly, the other platform is SAARC, but we do not know what the approach is going to be. Is the government looking to boycott the SAARC in Islamabad? Is it looking to use the SAARC platform to make a case against Pakistan? What exactly is the government thinking?
No, Barkha, as far as the government thinking is concerned, I believe the spokesperson of the government would be the best to give the reply. Since I am the party spokesperson, I would not be able to preempt as to what the government would be strategizing on important platforms like SAARC or the UN. But I'm sure a befitting reply would be given on these platforms. But having said this, let me come to the core issue. The core issue was, because of the competent diplomatic principles of Mr. Modi's government, we had vis-a-vis Pakistan, we had seen as to how the issue of Kashmir had gone to the back burner. The issue of Kashmir was a peripheral issue. And rather, Balochistan had become the central point of discussion. It lost not only the diplomatic circle, but as far as the relation of India-Pakistan is concerned, and the issue was raised also in United Nations. What Pakistan today has done is, by a direct attack of Pakistani army on the Indian army installation in Uri, Pakistan tries, out of frustration, tries its best to shift the focus back to Kashmir. Pakistan wants that India should be retaliating in hurry. Pakistan wants that India should send out confusing signals so that it can internationalize the issue of Kashmir. And I believe that's the reason as to why what the DGMO said a while ago in his press conference, press briefing, was that, well, yes, there would be a retaliation from the Indian Army, since the Indian Army has been attacked by the Pakistani Army, but it would be of the nature which would be chosen by the Indian Army. The timing of it and the location of it would also be chosen by the Indian Army. So I think we have to wait, and I would not like to enter into any kind of jingoism. It's an extremely important position over here, because India has gradually and successfully isolated Pakistan in a way that we have seen in the last few weeks as to how Pakistan also had stopped one of its major economical aids to Pakistan, approximately $30 billion. So naturally, this has to continue in the future.
Okay, now Manish Tiwari of the Congress is also with us. Ambassador Hardeep Puri, senior diplomat, is with us. Brigadier Gurmeet Kaval, as I said, Air Vice Marshal Manmohan Bahadur. We have a very eminent panel, but first let me just bring in Manish here. Manish, the Congress today has chosen to not stand with the BJP, not stand with the government. Instead, you yourself are going back to Kandahar. You're going back to the NDA previously under Atal Bihari Vajpayee, being responsible for the creation of Masood Azhar. Masood Azhar, Jaish-e-Mohammed, of course, being responsible for this terror strike in Uri. Manish, is this the time for the Congress? Not even 24 hours have passed since this terror strike. The country is still taking stock. The families of soldiers are still coming to terms with this. Is this the time for the Congress to be playing politics?
Well, Barkha, first of all, I would like to disabuse the notion that we are playing politics. We are merely asking the hard questions which need to be asked, for the simple reason because 18 of our soldiers have lost their lives. And if I see from your television ticker, possibly the toll has gone up to 19. So therefore, an obvious question needs to be asked that... Over the past 27 months, you have seen that the Pakistan policy of this government has been a litany of U-turns, somersaults and flip-flops. And therefore, this is not the first terror attack which has happened on the watch of this government. You had two back-to-back attacks in Gurdaspur and Pathankot in a state which had been terror-free from 1995 onwards, when the assassination of the late Chief Minister of Punjab had taken place. And then you've seen this escalation in Jammu and Kashmir, the latest being this unfortunate attack in Uri, which after Kalchuk was possibly the biggest and the deadliest attack on a military establishment. So therefore, under those circumstances, when you hear a lot of rhetoric and bellicose rhetoric emanating out of the government and its ministers and the functionaries of the Bharatiya Janata Party, you legitimately need to raise two or three questions. Question number one is that can the Prime Minister assure the country that there would not be a terror attack in future? Number two, does this government have a policy towards Pakistan?
Who can make that assurance?
And if it does have a policy, pray what the policy is.
Manmohan Singh make that assurance? Can any leader make that assurance? Can any leader make that assurance, Manish, that there will never be a terror strike? Where I'm sitting in New York, Barack Obama can't make that assurance. Bombs went off in New York. Manmohan Singh, Dr. Manmohan Singh could not make that assurance. How can the Congress ask anybody for the times we live in to make that assurance?
Well, Barkha, for the simple reason that the Congress party or the UPA government, and I'm not getting into a tit-for-tat UPA versus the Bharatiya Janata Party, but in a certain sense did ensure that, you know, the tragic incident of 26/11 which took place was never ever repeated. This country assured or ensured that the Kalchuk attack, which took place in 2002, was never ever repeated in the same magnitude or with the same intensity. And therefore, that goes to the two other questions which this government needs to ask itself. And the question is, what is it that it wants to do qua Pakistan? And B, what is it that it can do qua Pakistan? Because in the answer to those two questions lies the full spectrum of options which may perhaps be available to India. So therefore, you know, when you talk about Pakistan, you talk about neutralizing terror, you first of all have to determine as to what are the weapons which are there in your arsenal, and then comes the next step as to how are you going to actualize or operationalize those options.
I need to move on to the others, but Sambit, a brief interjection, and then I want to go to Ambassador Hardeep Puri. Yeah, okay, all right.
Yes, Barkha, first I'm sorry I was not mic'd up, so probably my first reaction did not go well in the air. I regret for that. Secondly, coming to what Mr. Manish Tiwari said, I believe the collective intelligence of this government is far more than we spokesperson, be it Manish Tiwari, whom I respect, or be it Sambit Patra. So naturally, what Mr. Manish Tiwari has put in must have been thought by the government. And I also believe that Ghulam Nabi Azad is a very senior politician from the Congress party, and he has stated only yesterday and released a statement. He says, and this should be in fact brought out in public, he stated, and I quote, many terrorists have been killed in the border by our soldiers. Maybe they were angry. They, meaning Pakistan, were angry because of this. This year, a record of sorts has been created by the soldiers of Indian Army by killing all infiltrators from Pakistan in Kashmir. I don't think there were so many numbers killed in one year. Maybe Pakistan took revenge because of this. So naturally, when Ghulam Nabi Azad acts in such a mature way, I think Mr. Manish Tiwari should also pick up point or two of maturity from Mr. Ghulam Nabi Azad. And he rightly states, statistically states, that it is because of the fact that infiltration has been curbed, because of the fact that Pakistan is frustrated that we have such an attack over here. We have to unite the Congress, the BJP, and the opposition on this issue.
I would agree with that, Sambit, and we could hear you loud and clear this time, so thank you. I would agree with that. I do believe this is not the time for BJP Congress politics. I do believe that no government can actually give an assurance for the times we live in, Manish, that there will not be another terror strike. But I also believe that the opposition is within its rights to ask the government. The government has made a very big statement. The assaulters will not go unpunished.
I'm sorry, Barkha, but the defense minister of India...
Are we talking tactically? Are we talking
Barkha,
literally?
Barkha, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The Defence Minister of India gave that assurance. The Defence Minister of India, after the Pathankot attack, and I quoted him in the press briefing today, said that these are the last terrorists who will come across the LOC or the international border. He says, no terrorist will come without my permission. So therefore, we are not talking in the air. Please go back and revisit your record. The Defense Minister of India, Mr. Manohar Parrikar, on behalf of this government, gave this assurance to the people of this country.
I do not want to enter into
Manish and Sambit, you both made your points. Let's hear.
That.
Let's hear from the non-politicians.
I agree with you, Barkha.
Let's hear from the non-politicians. Yeah, so let's avoid that. We'll come back to the politicians. I want to look at diplomatically what can happen and what can happen tactically. So let me start with Ambassador Hardeep Puri and Ambassador Kethi Singh. Ambassador Hardeep Puri, you know the United Nations better than most, as does Ambassador Kethi Singh. We're in the week where the United Nations General Assembly is going to kick off. Nawaz Sharif is arriving here today where I'm sitting in New York. He's going to try and make a case on Kashmir. India is going to talk terrorism. What can we do when the Prime Minister chairs a meeting and the decision is to isolate Pakistan globally? What does that translate into specifically and what realistically can we do, sir? Ambassador Puri.
Barkha, the United Nations General Assembly, particularly the high-level segment, is a great opportunity where 193 countries will be represented, some at the level of heads of state and government, others at the level of foreign ministers. This provides India an opportunity at the level of our foreign minister and the minister of state and the foreign secretary who's also there to sensitize the countries which are gathered there through bilateral interaction about what Pakistan has been doing, including the latest attack on Uri. I would then say that after that sensitization, we also have to talk to some of the others who can do the lifting. Please recall that in April this year, when India tried to get Masood Azhar listed in the 1267 and Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee, we were told by the Chinese that they had only a technical halt, technical hold on the listing, and that they required a little more discussion with us. Please recall that this is the person who in the early 90s had provided 400 jihadis to Osama bin Laden for the jihad in Somalia. This is the same person who came to the mosques in the Midlands of the UK, in Birmingham, in Wolverhampton and elsewhere, and spread jihad through the Gurdwaras. This is a person whom the Americans know very well. Perhaps the time has come for us to speak to the permanent members and tell them that not actioning this person, not describing him for what he is, a confirmed terrorist, is going to create problems in other parts of the world. Having said that, I don't think that we can confine ourselves
but
only
Ambassador
to
Puri,
a diplomatic
Ambassador
response.
Puri.
Barkha, yes.
Okay.
My view is that response has to be multi-layered.
No, I was going to ask
And the time has come for us to change the game. We have to play hardball, which means considering our options in a very carefully thought through manner. And I think we have been left with no choice but to seek such safeguards as are necessary, including through military action, so that this menace of terror cannot be unleashed against us on a continuing basis. Now, Mr. Tiwari is somebody I greatly respect, but I would like to reach out to him and say that, look, this policy for the last several decades has been anchored in self-restraint. You don't abandon self-restraint altogether. But you need to change the game and take it to hardball. There are many ways in which we can inflict pain on Pakistan. It can be done economically, it can be done diplomatically, it can be done militarily. What those instruments are, I don't think they lend themselves to a discussion of a saber-rattling kind over television screens. We had enough of it yesterday. I personally felt very uneasy when uniformed personnel of yesterday people who wore the uniform till yesterday were coming and discussing those options. Those options, I think, will need to be exercised. Even if the government wants to exercise restraint, I think public opinion has crossed the threshold, and I think it will act as a pressure point on the government. And I'm afraid that this old policy of self-restraint is something of the past. We are looking at a new game here, and a game which necessarily means hardball.
Now, Ambassador Puri, no disagreement that there is a new game, a new response needed, that public opinion will not accept less. But equally, I'm glad you're actually saying that we can't call out those tactics from television programs. You did contentiously have an ex-army chief on this very program last night talking about time for India to raise its own fedayeens in what has clearly become an asymmetric war. But I want to push your point further with Ambassador Casey Singh. Ambassador Casey Singh, when the Chinese intervened to stop what India wanted at the UN on Jaish-e-Mohammed and Masood Azhar, where are the chances that, you know, when you hear people say India should move to have Pakistan declared a terrorist state, given the American investment tactically in Pakistan because of its interest in Afghanistan, given that we have invested so much in a relationship with America, whereas some would say that's actually brought China and Pakistan closer, what are the chances that we can actually play hardball diplomatically? I'll come to the tactical aspect with Brigadier Kaval and Emir Shal Bahadur. But what can you realistically do here? We have not even managed to get the Chinese on board vis-a-vis the Jaish-e-Mohammed.
Look, to expect that we can work to immediately
and the Jamaat-ul-Dawah.
Yeah, to get Pakistan declared as a terrorist state is a bridge too far. US will not help you with that, but certainly the Chinese will block it. There are no two ways about it. That's a strategic, Pakistan's a strategic asset for them. If we can get them to agree on Masood Azhar, I think that would be an achievable target. But that itself would send a signal, because after all, these persons who have come across and committed the act, they are from his group. And that would be linking it to this group immediately, and we should use it as a pressure point. Now, the problem which has arisen is, it's not only that we need to get aggressive. I think the government has already got aggressive. The very fact that Prime Minister from the Red Fort talked of Gilgit, talked of Balochistan, we have never raised Balochistan before, was a more forward policy we were adopting on Pakistan. Now, having adopted that policy, certainly we would have expected that the Pakistan army would react. And they have reacted. So we shouldn't be surprised that they reacted. But we should have been expecting it, that there would be something like this. But what surprises me is that if you change your strategy and you want a forward policy and a more thrustful policy in Pakistan, then you should not be for 48 hours scurrying around in meetings, giving an impression that you don't have a backup plan. You know, we should have immediately said, we know how to respond. Today, the DGMO has responded 24 hours late, where he said, we will respond in a manner and a time of our choosing. That should have come yesterday. So which means the government has adopted an aggressive political strategy without a backup in terms of what will you do when the Pakistan army brings the battle to you. Because this is a battle the Pakistani army has brought to the Indian army. So therefore, we have to unleash the Indian army. They know how to do it. They've been doing it across the LOC. We don't need to discuss it. But let them do it their way, and which is what DGMO said. But the larger issue
But Ambassador, is... Ambassador Casey Singh, are you saying, Ambassador Casey Singh, that what has happened in Uri is in direct response to India actually raising Balochistan from the ramparts of the Red Fort? Because all of this is happening, by the way, on a day when the grandson of Akbar Bukhti, a major Baloch leader, Bramdog Bukhti, and he'll be joining us on this program, has openly said that he will seek asylum in India. Are you suggesting that going aggressive on Balochistan has invited this terror strike from Pakistan, that this is the Pakistan army bringing the battle to our doorstep?
Absolutely. The Pakistan army has brought the focus back to Kashmir, what Sampad was saying. Because now it leaves you with two options. Either you do nothing, in which case it really reduces your ability to exert pressure, or you react across the LOC and you internationalize the issue at a time when their prime minister is sitting in New York. So they are wanting to bring the focus back on the valley and to the unrest in the valley and give it an impetus and internationalize it and take it off where we had taken it, which is Balochistan and the other issue. But that should have been expected, as I said. So it is not surprising. But what I would have expected is that the government by now, it's been in for 2 years. And if you're following a so-called Doval doctrine in the valley, of what is called an aggressive defense, then we should have a backup plan. We shouldn't be scurrying around, meetings, running up and down. That plan should be obvious. The immediate reaction should have been, you know, you remember when I was a spokesman and the day Pakistan tested their device, everybody, the press was in my room at that stage, but we were ready with the answer. Everybody thought India is going to panic now. India had tested their device in 98. Pakistan's got explosions. We immediately said, my instructions were, to say this is structured into our assessment. We are not surprised by it. So, you know, sometimes your behavior indicates, your behavior has to be firm, abrupt, immediate, and that sends a signal to the Pakistan army to behave themselves, and then you do what you have to do.
Okay. Okay. Let me just get military responses here, and we'll take that back to Samit. Samit, half a second. Okay, go ahead, Samit. Quickly, then Brigadier Kaval and Air Marshal Bahadur have been waiting. Go ahead, Samit.
Barkha, mostly I agree with Ambassador Casey saying, but there are a few points which I disagree to. Number one, I disagree with the point that whatever happened in Uri yesterday was a reaction to a Baluchistan statement made by the Prime Minister. I believe Pathankot, when it happened, then no Baluchistan mention was made, but despite that, Pathankot happened. When 2008 happened, when the parliament was attacked, there was no Baluchistan mentioned then, yet it happened. I believe it is nature of Pakistan. Terrorism and fedayeen attacks and acts like this, dastardly acts like these, are ingrained in the nature of Pakistan and its army. So no excuse, in fact, is required as far as Pakistan is concerned. The second point to which I disagree is that the government was not prepared and there was a lot of running around and scurrying. I would say no, there was no running around and no scurrying, because leave aside what was told today, yesterday itself, the highest authority of the country, the Prime Minister himself, sent out a very stern message, and that was quite immediate. He said that those are perpetrators would be punished. So the roadmap is ready. The Prime Minister himself has responded.
Sambit, there's something to think about here. Something has shifted in the government's own Pakistan policy. This is something the opposition has been saying, and you can say don't play politics, but they want a more consistent Pakistan policy. For example, after Pathankot, Pakistani investigators, including the ISI, were allowed to the airbase in Pathankot, right? So the same government that is now talking very tough had a very different approach then, maybe because there was talk at that time that Pakistan had actually shared some intelligence. So I just want you to think a little bit about that while I get Brigadier Kaval and Air Marshal Bahadur. Brigadier Kaval, Gurmeet Kaval, you have been
talking about how
the game has changed, how we have to now... One minute. I'll come back to you. I'll come back to you. Brigadier Kaval, go ahead.
Barkha, my reasoned, considered assessment without being jingoistic is that it is payback time. Pathankot, our red lines were crossed. Despite that, we tried diplomacy. Diplomacy has failed to deliver. When diplomacy fails to deliver, it is time to let the guns do the talking. Guns make good ambassadors under certain circumstances.
How do the guns do the talking, sir? I understand, but we can't discuss tactics and military tactics on air, but please remember that there is now what is often called a nuclear deterrence to any conventional war. And maybe while Ambassador Hardeep Puri was uncomfortable with what General Shankar Roy Chaudhary said about raising your own fedayeen, this war with Pakistan is an asymmetric war. It is not a conventional symmetric war. So when you say let guns do the talking, we are nuclear powers. How do guns do the talking?
If we analyze the political and military aims, in my view, the political aim should be to raise the cost for Pakistan to wage its proxy war. They will not stop, but we must raise the cost. And the military aim derived from that should be to inflict punishment on the Pakistan army and its organs to stop them from waging their proxy war. Taking that military aim of inflicting punishment, there are several options at the tactical level: artillery, special forces, border action teams, airstrikes from fighter aircraft, as well as attack helicopters from our own side of the line of control, using precision-guided munitions, ensuring that there is minimum collateral damage. It cannot be eliminated altogether, but collateral damage should be minimum. There are plenty of military options. We have superiority of firepower over the Pakistanis on the line of control, and we must put it to effect.
Air Marshal Bahadur, would you agree with that? And I'm pushing this here because I don't want to be one of those war mongering television primetime warriors here. War comes with a cost, military action comes with a cost, and those of us who don't have to pay that cost, it's easy for us to talk about that. But you are both men in uniform, you understand that cost, you know that cost, you've paid that cost. So we do listen to you with respect and a lot of seriousness when you say this. Do you also feel that diplomacy has failed, the age or the phase for diplomacy is now over, Marshal Bahadur?
The military power is the business end of the stick. So we have to be careful. It is not tactical in nature. You have to see the strategic effect. So we have to disabuse ourselves that military action in this particular case is tactical in nature. The strategic effects have to be seen, which means that all our actions, many of them may invite a response. Now, the fact remains that actions are not being thought of now. We know that such a situation can arise, and plans for various stages would already be ready. The point is political direction, which is required, which of course is born out of diplomacy and the effects that will happen. So my point is that the military in any country, certainly in India, is ready with its plans. What it needs is clear political direction, because finally it is the politician and the government that faces the world as such with a response of the nation.
Barkha, may I just come in on that quickly?
You want to add to that? Yeah. Okay. Let Brigadier Kamal complete his point, Manish, and then we are going across to Bhramdag Bukti as well. Brigadier Kamal can complete his point, then Manish, and then we do have to go around the panel again. We also have Bhramdag Bukti, the grandson of Akbar Bukti, who's asked for asylum in India, joining us on the program. But Brigadier Kamal, complete your point, then Manish, and then we'll go to Mr. Bukti.
Half a minute on the nuclear factor that you mentioned as a deterrent. The strikes across the line of control to inflict punishment on the Pakistan army can be very carefully calibrated so as not to escalate to a full-fledged conflict. Of course, in the same breath, I must say that all military ventures are fraught with risk of escalation. Under certain circumstances, it could escalate. But Pakistan's threat of using tactical nuclear weapons to stop an Indian offensive is a bluff which can be called. I'll leave it at that.
I agree with him totally. It's a bluff, and that should not be Barkha, something that should
Barkha, may I respond to all this very quickly before you go across to Mr. Bukti?
Yeah, Manish, make your point, and then I want to go across to Mr. Bukti, and then Ambassador Puri and Ambassador Casey Singh can weigh in on what he says. Yes, Manish, go ahead. Go ahead, Manish.
You know, Barkha, the closest template that we have to the situation today is... I am actually trying to make a point.
Yes.
I said the closest template that we have to the situation today is what happened in the aftermath of the parliament attack in 2001. What is called Operation Parakram was possibly the largest mobilization of the Indian armed forces which had taken place after the 1971 war. And while that mobilization was at its peak, you had the Kalchuk attack in which unfortunately family members of armed forces were targeted. And eventually what came out of Parakram? At the end of a 9-month mobilization, you decided to draw down. And in a sense, you blunted the only instrument of coercive diplomacy which was available with you. The reason why I've raised this is because, you know, it's very easy to get jingoistic. It's very easy to shoot from the hip. But let us understand that a policy of mobilization, a policy of coercive action, a policy of across the border articulation, which some of the panelists were pointing to, can only be sustained provided there is that conviction, not only in the political leadership, but across the country, that there would be a cost which would we'll possibly have to pay if we go down that line. And therefore, you know, Operation Parakram at the end of it, you know, came to a whimper and you had to call it off. So therefore, you know, before going down this path, I think we need to be very careful as to how we calibrate our response.
Okay, let's park that for Ambassador Hardeep Puri and Ambassador KC Singh to respond to. I want to go across to Bhramdag Bukhti, the grandson of Akbar Bukhti, the great Baluch leader. Mr. Bukhti has today officially asked for a political asylum in India. Mr. Bukhti, you have spoken about the atrocities of the Pakistan army. There is a sense here among diplomats that the terror attack we've seen on our army in Uri is in response. We have Ambassador KC Singh here to India, actually now taking a global position on Balochistan. What is behind your thinking, Mr. Bukhti, of wanting asylum in India? If India says yes, will you actually be coming to India, and how many more and others like you would want to do the same?
Thank you for inviting me at your show. We have decided this in our central committee meeting that I am going to ask formally for political asylum in Indian embassy. And the main reason behind this move is that I am here for last 6 years in Switzerland and unable to move out from Switzerland. So this is a very frustrating situation for me, being a president of political party and leader of my people and not able to move out from Switzerland. So I think there are a lot of things. I have to meet the world leaders, Indian leadership, the U.S. congressmen, U.S. lawmakers to discuss the situation of Balochistan, what's going on in Balochistan, what Pakistani army is doing in Balochistan. Exactly like the Pakistani army is not only involved in Balochistan. He is supporting the terrorism in India, in Afghanistan, in Bangladesh. So I think these all things should be highlighted internationally in all international forums. So the biggest problem right now I'm facing that I'm not able to do anything from Switzerland. There is only one institution in Switzerland, which is the United Nations. So, and we are doing putting our all efforts to highlight this in United Nations 3 times a year in human rights session. But other than that, I'm not able to do anything, so my request is to please grant me asylum. And this is my political and democratic request, because the Indian people know very well the situation and very well aware of the situation. And also, India is also like affected because of this Pakistani terrorism.
Mr. Bukhti, what help beyond the asylum do you seek from India? Balochistan has clearly become something that India is raising at international fora. We have senior diplomats on this program tonight who are actually suggesting that the terror attack we've just gone through in Jammu and Kashmir could be linked to that. What help do you seek from India? Is it diplomatic? Is it financial? What is the kind of help you seek from India at this moment?
Yeah, at this moment, I think this whatever the Indian government is doing now internationally for last 1 month, I think this is what we were asking for years, and we were hoping that the Indian government highlight the situation, because India is the biggest democracy in the world and largest democracy in the world, and being a responsible neighbor, karna chahiye tha bahut arse pehle, but abhi hua hai. This is very encouraging for us, and as you've already seen. Yeah, as you already seen that after the statement of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi saab, uske baad hamare pure nation ki taraf se ek welcome kiya gaya aur khud thank you kaha gaya, aur uske baad aapne dekha Balochistan mein, especially for last 1 month, there was again heavy military operation, killing of the people who jinhone welcome kaha aur isko saraha, unke khilaf karwai ki gayi. For last 1 month, there have been more than 200 people have been picked up. 50 people jo hain unko mara gaya. Kuch ladies jo hain wo hamare utha ke le gaye, jo ki peaceful protest kar rahe the. So this is the situation. This is a warlike situation going on. There is a Baloch genocide going on. Nobody have access to go there to visit, to कि वहां पर देखें कि लोगों के साथ क्या हो रहा है. ऑल ह्यूमन राइट ऑर्गेनाइजेशन वहां पर जा नहीं सकते, एक्सेस नहीं है, और हम हैं जो अपने लोगों के लिए बात करना चाहते हैं, वॉन्ट टू टेल द वर्ल्ड व्हाट्स गोइंग ऑन देयर. हमें एक्सेस नहीं है कि हम जिनेवा से बाहर जा सकें. सो आई डोंट नो, ऑल माई पोलिटिकल एक्टिविस्ट, ऑल माई पोलिटिकल पार्टी मेंबर्स जो गए हैं फ्रांस, जर्मनी, लंदन, all of them got asylum, but I don't know why I am stuck here and why the Swiss government is giving like treating especially myself like this, that at some point I am thankful to the Swiss government that I am safe, but if I am not able to travel, being a president of political party, to yahi cheez Pakistan chahta hai ki kuch na kare.
जी, और आपने कहा यह बहुत पहले होना चाहिए था, और आप खुश हैं कि प्रधानमंत्री नरेंद्र मोदी ने इसको उठाया. आप कहते हैं स्ट्रॉन्ग वर्ड्स, वॉर लाइक सिचुएशन, पाकिस्तान आर्मी गिल्टी ऑफ अ जेनोसाइड. मिस्टर मुक्ति, प्लीज स्टे विद अस. आई वांट रिएक्शंस फ्रॉम द पैनल टू व्हाट यू सेड, एज वेल एज व्हाट वी आर लुकिंग हैड इन आर अटेम्प्ट्स टू आइसोलेट पाकिस्तान ग्लोबली. एम्बेसडर हरदीप पुरी एंड एम्बेसडर केसी सिंह, लेट्स ब्रिंग यू बैक इन. यू हर्ड ब्रिगेडियर कंवल, यू हर्ड एयर मार्शल बहादुर, देयर सेइंग द फेज फॉर डिप्लोमेसी इज ओवर. गिवन व्हाट यू आर हियरिंग द बलूच leaders say, we are going to see the UNGA be a virtual sort of war zone, a diplomatic war zone for India and Pakistan. Ambassador Hardeep Puri, if the phase for diplomacy is over, as the military seems to feel, what is the relevance of what we can do here at the UNGA in New York?
Barkha, the Pakistan government is entirely responsible and has to thank itself for India having put the focus on Baluchistan. They should not blame India. The Pakistan is responsible for this. We have tried a policy of restraint. We have acquiesced in their acts of terror, and it has led us nowhere. I must confess, I am inclined to agree with my friend Casey, my long-standing friend, that the new focus on Baluchistan has to be looked at in terms of an explanation of why this attack took place. I know that Pakistan has been conducting terror attacks against India for several decades, but this new escalation, the Uri attack, may find an explanation in that new focus that we have put on Baluchistan. Having said that, I would like to urge my ex-uniformed friends on the show, diplomacy never ends, even if you are using economic leverage, even if you are exercising other options, and I have no desire to add to the menu of options that Gurmeet has already offered on your show. These are options which should not be discussed on the television. There is no point in giving our friends across the border an advance into what all is doable and how the Indian military mind is operating. All I would say is that even as we exercise those options at a time of our choosing, we will have to keep the diplomatic game on. We cannot call off the show in New York and tell the other 192 countries that because we are exercising another option, we don't. They go hand in hand. We have to sensitize each world leader at whatever level, foreign minister, head of state, head of government, to say, look, this is the real face of Pakistan. Look at the GPS. Look at the other evidence. Pakistan's culpability stands established beyond any doubt. I've been of that view since 2009, but that was a policy for good reason, and Manish is pointing towards some trends. I only hope that we don't make the same mistakes of the past, and I'm not in a mood for mutual finger-pointing. All I would say is that we should learn from the mistakes of the past, and we should go ahead and raise the stakes diplomatically, economically, and inflict a price on Pakistan so that they realize that to play that game, A, both can play at the game. Several people can play at the game. You know, I had the privilege of working in the defense ministry when General Shankar Rai Chaudhary was the army chief. So I find it very difficult to comment on what he has said. All I would say is I would not have discussed an option like that on television. It's my discipline of 4 decades as a civil servant which prevents me from saying that. What kind of force we use, whether we use X or Y as an instrument, that's not something to be discussed on the television screen. We are being watched here across the border itself. I am delighted that since yesterday there has been a lowering of the temper. There has been less saber rattling. Because when you mean business, you don't have to advertise it from the rooftops. You just have to carry out those actions. Let Pakistan feel the heat. Yeah. Again, I say it is payback time. I agree with Gurmeet totally. It is payback time, and we will do it. Let us not be pushed into it because of any artificial timetable. All the stakeholders in this process have to give their advice, and that's the Prime Minister is capable of, and I'm sure he will act in the best interests of the country.
Okay, while we cannot discuss military options, and I agree with you that General Roy Chaudhary saying raise your fidain, if that is to happen, that can't be discussed on television, a covert op by definition.
No, Barkha,
I do have to take last comments from all of you, and I will request Mr. Bukti to stay on as well. Yes, Amit, I'm coming to you. I'll just get Ambassador KC Singh.
Barkha,
then,
just
Amit,
take 10 seconds.
You can
put Ambassador down the question KC thereafter.
Singh, build on what... Yeah, okay.
This is very essential. Since we have discussed, I was not there last evening, nor did I hear the debate that took place on your channel last evening, but I gather that one of our former generals might have taken up this option, as I am suggested over here, that India can or should raise fidains like Pakistan.
Yes.
Let me tell you, India will never do that. India is not a country which ever promotes terrorism or any kind of such attack. Never. Whichever party is in power, was in power, would be in power, can we ever think of having such kind of attack strategies. We fight face to face. We don't fight with covered eyes. We are not a terrorist propagator like Pakistan. Fidain is totally a different kind of conception. India never believes in such kind of conception. So from the spokesperson of a ruling party, you can have my words. That please, for God's sake, let's not discuss that whether India will ever have a Fidain group or not. We'll never, never, ever, ever have a Fidain group.
Okay, that is an important clarification. And in any case, as I said, anything that's covert cannot be discussed overtly. Let me start with last comments. I do want to go back to Mr. Bukti, so I hope you're there with us, Bukti Saab. But Ambassador KC Singh, while we can't discuss military options, we can discuss diplomatic options. Now, Hardeep Puri says the diplomatic game has to be simultaneous to the military or the tactical game. What can we do diplomatically? You know, General Shankar Roy Chaudhary, one of the reasons he made the comment he did about raising your own fidain was he said nothing has worked diplomatically. America's support is platitudinous. China has moved closer to Pakistan. What should we do? Give me a specific example of diplomatically. For example, should the Prime Minister not go to SAARC? Should he use SAARC in Islamabad as a platform to come closer with Bangladesh and other countries of the region? Give me a specific diplomatic measure that India could do at this point or take at this point.
See, firstly, as a general principle, Hardeep is absolutely right. You never close. You can walk. You can talk and you can fight. You can talk and you can quarrel at the same time. But I think, let me go back to Mr. Bukti's argument. I've been a great supporter of India passing an asylum law. Unfortunately, we do not have an asylum law. We do it on an ad hoc basis. The way India is different from China is that we are the largest democracy. We offer human rights. But then we become very, very scared of openly standing up for them. So I think it's a very good thing Prime Minister is doing, but it should not be just Mr. Bukti. Let any other person who is persecuted, any other political fighter who wants to come, and that is why India would not be China. India would be different from China. And that's that we want to be the light in Asia of freedom, democracy, and so on and so forth. If Prime Minister is going down that route, and it's not just a tactic to deal with Pakistan, then of course it's a very good step. Not only him, but there may be others who want to come. We've given protection before. King Tribhuvan came here. Najib, Afghanistan ruler's family was here. We've had Mujib's family, etc. So India has given shelter and protection to people, of course, Dalai Lama being the principal one. So therefore, India is going down a route which are Indian values. So we have to respond in a manner which is corresponding to Indian values and yet affects Pakistan, because that is what Pakistan is scared of. A closed society doesn't want light to be shown there. Name the officers. Let me give you another example. Now, if not only the GPS that we have caught, let's find out which are the units. Let's name the generals and the colonels who are involved in those units and list them and then register cases and send out red corner notices and say these are international criminals who are giving us support there and we will report against them and build up that thing and let Mr. Bukti give us the names. And that is how you put pressure on the Pakistani army. That is also a diplomatic way of doing it. But one last thing, what we can also do is, what Pakistan does not realize, there is one major instrument we have, which is the Indus Water Treaty. We have never threatened to touch that. But water is the lifeline of Pakistan. And I think we need to read out the riot act to them that if you carry on, I think at the very least, we should start having canals connecting to Chenab and Jhelum and say, if you create a problem, then you'll be punished by the water being diverted. Otherwise, we will not take away the water. We haven't since the 50s. But I think those are the pressure points to build up, because traditional pressure points don't work. There is hardly any commerce with Pakistan. There is hardly any people-to-people contact. So how do you punish them on a normal scale of how you punish other civilized countries? So straight away we go to military. But therefore we have to develop non-military pressure points. And I think human rights, democracy is a major pressure point.
Now, I just want to interrupt here. I'm going to give 30 seconds to everybody to make their concluding comments, as well as to Bukti Saab. But there is a statement that has come from India in front of the UN Human Rights Council, which actually says that the acts of terrorism are the most egregious violations of human rights, as they rob their victims of the most fundamental of human rights, the right to life. The statement by India goes on to say that the fundamental reason for disturbances in Kashmir is cross-border terrorism promoted by Pakistan. It goes on to name Hafiz Saeed and Syed Salahuddin and says that the fact that known terrorists like Hafiz Saeed and Syed Salahuddin have been able to hold rallies in Pakistan's main cities is a reflection of the state of affairs and can mean only one thing: active support for such personalities and the designated organizations that they lead is the blatant disregard of the rule of law, and that is the new normal in Pakistan. Rather than internationalizing issues with India, Pakistan should cleanse itself of its terrorists. It goes on to once again mention, this is the third time we're actually seeing Balochistan mentioned before the UN Human Rights Council, as well as the atrocities in POK, and says that Pakistan's continued mistreatment of large parts of its own population has created a cauldron of tumult. The time has come when the international community needs to address the plethora of human rights concerns in Pakistan. And we urge the Council to take a holistic view of this threat and not permit the use of terrorism as state policy to be masqueraded as the advocacy of human rights. I'm just going to read this out again. This is important. We urge the UN Human Rights Council to take a holistic view of the threat of terrorism and not permit terrorism as state policy to be masqueraded as an advocacy of human rights. Now, a quick 30 seconds from everybody. We'll start with Manish, 30 seconds, then Gurmeet, and then Marshal Bahadur, and Bukti Saab gets the last word, and then Sambit, of course. Go ahead, Brigadier Kaval. We'll start with you.
Look, at the national level, I advocate, recommend a four-pronged strategy. I spoke of just one prong, that was military options. That's the question that you had asked. Number two, covert operations to take out terrorist leaders whom Pakistan will not punish. Number three, isolate the Pakistan army internationally. Use our buyer's clout to ensure nobody sells arms to them, Army, Navy, Air Force. And finally, continue to negotiate with the duly elected civilian government of Pakistan with the hope that one day in future, we will resolve the seemingly intractable problems of today. It will also help to isolate the Pakistan army and reduce its salience in Pakistan's polity. Four-pronged strategy at the national level.
Okay. All right. Marshal Bahadur.
Yeah, by no stretch
of
imagination that we meant that diplomacy is finished and it's the military option. No, not at all. Diplomacy continues continuously. That's one. Number two, any good military service always has plans, awaits political direction. Same is the case with the Army, Navy and the Air Force here. And I thought to present a united front, I personally feel that could there be a system where the opposition is briefed on plans that the government is making so that the people at large know that everybody is in
important
it together.
Point. Okay, that's a very important point. Manish, I think that's an important point. Time for national consensus. Read in the opposition as well at this moment.
Well, Barkha, I want to start by responding to what Mr. Bukti had said, that the Balochistan issue should have been raised earlier. And I couldn't agree with him more. In fact, the irony is that Balochistan was raised in Sharm el-Sheikh in 2009 when Pakistan walked into a baited trap. But ironically, those people who've raised Balochistan now were in the forefront of decrying the attempt to put a spotlight on the human rights abuses which were taking place in Balochistan. But as they say, their eye par durust eye, and we do hope that the struggle of the Balochi people
okay.
in order to be
Sharma
able
Sheikh
to
a whole different
live
argument.
A life of dignity is something which gets supported by everybody around the world. And yes, there is national consensus. But and the consensus
okay,
is
Sambit,
let the
Sambit.
Government do the right thing in the UNGA and the opposition is always in support.
Barkha,
okay, Sambit, and then Mukti Saab has to get the last word. Sambit, go ahead. Yeah.
Barkha, as far as Manish's statement about Sarmal Sheikh is concerned, I believe Manish was the only spokesperson then who was defending Manmohan Singh. Rest were not defending Manmohan Singh. I remember Manmohan Singh's own statement was that it was a badly crafted draft, and that was the reason as to why he made a mistake in Sarmal Sheikh. And the second point is, look, Barkha, I'll tell you something very candidly. You
he never
have
said that.
Mr.
Don't
Bukti
misquote
today
him.
On your panel. Just a second. You have Mr. Bukti on the panel today, and I've said.
Don't misquote
Can I complete? Can I complete, Barkha? Every second Indian today knows Mr. Bukti.
Please do, but don't talk about
quickly because I have to go to Mr. Bukti and then I have to close the show. Sambit, go ahead.
I want to have one.
Yes.
I just need to for a minute.
Please allow me.
Second,
I was not
Barkha.
Interjecting
one
anyone.
I have
just
yes.
a second. Let me
sorry,
please
sorry.
Complete this. Let me
please,
just complete this.
Please, Sambit, complete your point. I have to go to Mr. Bukti now. Please. Yes. Yes.
Barkha, you don't have to shout because there is a time lag, so you have a problem hearing us, but let me complete it. Number one, that you have Mr. Bukti, that Balochistan is discussed because of the very fact that the change of policy has occurred and Pakistan is today on a back foot thanks to the policy of Mr. Modi. That is quite evident in the discussion that otherwise Bukti was not known in India, otherwise no one discussed Balochistan. Today, if our panelists agree with the fact that, well, whatever happened in Uri was because of a reaction to Balochistan, it means that India some way has shaken the conscience of Pakistan in a way which was not done previously.
Okay. Okay, let me give the last word to Mr. Bukti. Mr. Bukti, you have spoken about a genocide by the Pakistan army and you have said ki jo India ne kiya wo bahut pehle hona chahiye tha. Ab aage ki baat kare, yahan se aage aapko Bharat se kya umeed hai?
Ji, hamari Bharat se umeed yahi hai ki please to support the Baloch people. As I said before, that we are in warlike situation. Hamara genocide ho raha hai. कोई एक्सेस नहीं है, प्रोजेक्शन नहीं है, हमें एक स्ट्रेटेजिक तरीके से हमारी जो पॉपुलेशन है उसको खत्म किया जा रहा है, हमारे टीचर्स, लॉयर्स, पॉलिटिकल लीडरशिप सबको मारा जा रहा है. तो दिस इज अ सिचुएशन गोइंग ऑन, ओनली इंडिया कैन अंडरस्टैंड, अफगानिस्तान कैन अंडरस्टैंड, बांग्लादेश कैन अंडरस्टैंड. तो अफगानिस्तान इज ऑलरेडी इन अ सिचुएशन, आप सब लोगों को पता है. तो ओनली अ रिस्पॉन्सिबल कंट्री लाइक इंडिया कैन टेक अ स्टैंड एंड हाईलाइट इट इन ऑल इंटरनेशनल फोरम्स. Like abhi jo ho raha hai pichle kai dinon se is very encouraging and I am very very thankful to the Prime Minister of India and I hope this will continue in the future and the role of Indian media to support the Baloch cause and highlight the Baloch cause. And then after I think wo sab kuch baad mein aayega. So first of all we will have to
we'll have to leave it there, Mr. Bukti, on a day when you have asked for political asylum officially and there has been a tectonic shift in the India-Pakistan relationship, one in the raising of Balochistan, two in the terror strike. This is an inflection point, there's no doubt about that, but this is also a time for considered and some would say quiet responses unmediated by those of us in television and in the media. Thank you to our panel. We'll see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
Thank you,
thank you for watching. Goodbye.